Morning. Today's daf is daf samech. Where are we up to? Okay, today's daf is daf samech hey in Menachos, and we are on samech talmud beis, and we are at the Mishnah. Started yesterday. The sixth parak of Menachos is fantastic. It has it deals with the Karban Omer. We're going to talk about Sfiras Omer over the course of this parak, a lot of historical context, because we deal a lot with the machlokas between the tzedukim by tusim versus the perushim, in which they have a basic debate in terms of how to understand simple psukim in the Torah. I introduced yesterday the basic machlokas between the tzedukim by tusim, and today, daf samechei, we get a very, very good further explanation of this machlokas and how the perushim deal with the Baitusim and the Tzedukim. We are on the Mishnah. We start with the Mishnah. We're on Samach Dalam and Beis. Let's get right into it. The Mishnah starts, Mitzvah Sa'om Elahavi Min HaKarov. Okay, so we have a mitzvah to bring the Karban Omer. Karban Omer is a mincha, right? That makes sense. It fits right into Menachos. Unlike all other Menachos, which are brought from wheat, this is brought from barley. The harvesting of the Omer was done the night prior, meaning Motzei Yontif, of Pesach, because remember the Omer is the 16th day of the month, so Motzei Yontif, so they would go out and they would harvest. Even if that fell out on the Shabbos, they would still harvest nevertheless. So where do you get the barley from? So the answer really is anywhere.
And that's the only time you harvest on Shabbos.
And that would be the only time, right? That would be a time when harvesting would be mutar on Shabbos. So where do you get the barley from? So you can go anywhere in the country, right? But keep in mind.
What else? For the Chodesh.
You can go anywhere in the country, but keep in mind, when I say anywhere in the country, you have to be able to bring it to Yerushalayim the next day. So I don't really mean anywhere, but you know what I mean. In other words, there's no specific place in Eretz Yisrael that necessarily has to be the place where you get the barley from. But the Mishnah says Mitzvah Sa'om Elavi Min HaKarov. Get it from the most proximate place to Yerushalayim. Gemara is going to offer two reasons why that should be, that you have to go to the closest place. Lo bikir akarov, but let's say it's not available, meaning no place, no field near Yerushalayim is growing barley this particular season. So what do you do? Or the Mishnah says it's not ripe yet. So lo bikir akarov Yerushalayim, ivino sabot mikol makom. So, in that case, do a search. Go anywhere you possibly can in order to find and locate barley. Migagos Srifim. There was one time where they had to go all the way out to Gagos Srifim. Now I say all the way out. I don't know where Gagos Srifim is. So I don't know how far they went out, but it must be far. In other words, obviously the point of the Mishnah is that they went far in order to get it. Ushtei Alechem. And apparently it's the same year, or no, not necessarily. Ushtei Alechem, and when it was required to get the Ushtei Alechem, the wheat for the Shtei Alechem, which is born Shavuos, so they went to Bikas Ein Socher. So they went to the valley of Ein Socher. And again, just from the context of the Mishnah, I know that it's far from Yerushalayim. I don't know where it is.
Rashi says, Rechov Yerushalayim Ma'od.
Yeah, it's very far. So my time up. Now, why do you need to go Karov? Why do you need to go somewhere close? So the Gemara says, Ibai Seima Mishum Carmel. Okay, so there are two explanations that are going to be offered by the Gemara. Explanation number one is because of the requirement of Carmel. Torah says, when bringing the Omer, the Torah describes the barley, the grain itself, as Carmel. Okay, what does that mean? So we think of it as a company that manufactures wine, which is true, but Rashi writes as follows. It's the second Rashi on the Gemara. I'm sorry. Takriv Rach Umaleh. What Rashi does is Rashi takes the word and he breaks it up into two parts. Then after breaking it up into two parts, he takes those first two letters, the Chaf and the Resh, and he reverses them. So it's Carmel, it's Carmel, and Car, just take the letters and move them around, it's Rach. Rach means soft, Malay means full. So in other words, nice, ripe, and fresh. Now the important part over here, meaning this is a source that tells us it has to be brought from somewhere close, not somewhere far away. Rashi goes on to explain. It's got to be so soft. It rolls in the hand. Right, you remember your Mishnah and Beitza? The Mishnah and Beitza talks about molalin, right, rolling the grains on yantav.
It's so soft, and then when it rolls in your hand, the husk comes off?
Yeah, the husks come right off. The e-maisi me-rachok. Now, if it needs transportation, and you're bringing it from somewhere far away, nashiv lazika, the wind's going to blow, u-mitzkasha baderech, and it's going to get hard on the way, it will get a little stale through transportation.
Right.
So therefore, one of the sources why it has to come from somewhere close is because Carmel, it's got to be soft. It's got to be really soft when it makes it into the Beis HaMikdash. One. Two, says the Gemara, is Mishum Dein Mavir Nala Mitzvos. The second explanation of the Gemara is because we have a principle, general principle throughout Shas, Ein Mavir Nala Mitzvos, don't pass over the mitzvos. Right? When you put your tefillin back into your bag, so you should put your shel yad closer to you so that when you put your hand in, the shel yad approaches you first. There's a general rule of Ein Ma'avir Nala Mitzvah, don't pass over a mitzvah. So in other words, they're in the Sanhedrin, they're in the Beis HaMikdash, and they need to go out to get the Omer. So if you pass a field in order to go to another field, so you violate the principle of Ein Ma'avir Nala Mitzvahs. Right, like when I used to live in Kew Garden Hills back in the good old days. You know how many shuls I passed in order to get to the yeshiva?
Yeah. You came late.
I ate my beer and all the mitzvahs.
Is it reaping the mitzvah, the cutting?
Yes, harvesting.
That's a mitzvah.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it. If not a mitzvah, it's a heksha mitzvah, but okay. So we have two rules of the Gemara, two reasons of the Gemara in terms of why the necessity to have it get close to Yerushalayim and harvest it close to Yerushalayim, either because of the definition of Carmel, it's got to be soft, or Ein Ma'avir Nala Mitzvahs. Okay, Ma'aser Shabbat Omer Migagot Sreifim. So we have a story where one year it wasn't ripe, the fields near Yerushalayim weren't ripe, and they had to go out further. They went all the way out to Gagot Sreifim. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara here presents a brisa, Kishisar Malchay Beis Chashmonai Zel Zeh, civil war in the Jewish people. Right, the story about Hanukkah that we all know is a story where the small group of Jews led a revolt, a revolution against the mighty Greeks, and we defeated the mighty Greeks, and we have this yantav called Hanukkah. Right, that we all know. That's the fun part of the story. The historical part of the story, which is historical and not as popular and certainly not as exciting, is that children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren of the Hashmonaim dynasty weren't the best, weren't the greatest. Although we credit the original Hashmonaim as being heroes, and not only that, but we have a yantav to this day that celebrates it. But the later generations,
But there's nothing said about the first generation.
No, not to my knowledge, no. Although, if you want to find criticism, right? I'm generally not critical, but if you want to find criticism about them, so I'll give you a traditional classic source. Go to the Ramban on Chumash. He says that he does criticize the Chashmonaim, even the first generation, because what they did after they won the war is then they assumed the monarchy.
Right.
And the Ramban says on Chumash, it's right in Parshas Vayechi. The Ramban on Chumash says that they should not have done that. Meaning they should have won. Everything they did was heroic and necessary. But then after that point in time, they should have handed over the monarchy over to Shevet Yehuda. They didn't. They're Kohanim. They're Shevet Levi. So they should have handed over the monarchy back to Shevet Yehuda. They didn't. They assumed the monarchy. And the Ramban says that was not right. So, okay, could be that as a result of that, we find them a couple generations later having wars, a civil war. Different descendants of the Hashmonaim dynasty wanted the throne. So we have it, the way it's presented to us in the Braisa, So we have two descendants. I don't know what generation we're talking about over here. They're brothers, second, third generation, I don't know. But they're a later generation of the Hashmonaim dynasty. Hyrcanus was on the outside, Aristobulus was on the inside of Yerushalayim. And it basically turned into a civil war, and the picture we're going to paint is basically a siege around the walls of Yerushalayim, so that basically Aristobulus would yield to Hyrcanus. Now, they wanted the Beis HaMikdash to continue. They wanted the Karban Tamid to continue. So what they would do is that basically they would literally, I say this, fence the animal right? Basically, create like a almost like a black market to buy an animal, a carbon tamid. Animal would be brought over the wall. Money would be exchanged for the animal, and so they would be able to bring the carbon tamid daily. Hayisham zaken achad. No. The people inside would buy the carbon tamid from those that are outside. You know, obviously in a black market, you know, fashion, meaning obviously those that were outside, the Aristobulus, the Hyrcanus people would obviously not be in favor of this, but Aristobulus did this so that they would be able to continue bringing the carbon tamid. There was an older person who knew Chachmas Yavanis, meaning Chachmas Yavanis literally means Greek knowledge, Greek wisdom. Rashi explains over here, Remizos. He knew how to basically, he knew Morse code, if you will. Right? He knew how to give messages to other people, but without being detected that he was actually a rat, a stool. So, B'chachma Yavanis, Lazlahem B'chachma Yavanis. So, he basically sent a message to those people on the outside saying, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but they're smuggling in carbon tamid daily. Did you know that? So Amalem calls Mansha Asukim Bavode in Nimsar Biedchem. And you know, by the way, that that's their ultimate defense. Meaning, how come you're not winning the battle? How come there's no victory in the battle? Because they're bringing the carbon tamid. The carbon tamid provides for them divine assistance and divine aid. And so what are you going to do? There's no way you're going to defeat them as long as they're bringing the carbon tamid. So, those that were outside said, okay, so instead of tying a lamb to the rope, and instead of a lamb being that which was going to be carried over the wall inside, so they tied a chazir, they tied a pig. So, if you can imagine. So now, a pig was being pulled up the wall in order to be brought inside in order to be offered on the Beis HaMikdash. Now, right, as a lifetime Jew, I will tell you that, right, all the different levels of religiosity that you find in this world, everybody knows that, right, pig, pork, I mean, it's, you know, that's the worst. Even though from a clinical perspective, there's no difference between pork versus horse meat versus it's all treif, it's all not kosher, but we all know there's something to the chazir, there's something about the pig which makes it even more not kosher, even though none of us can actually put our finger on what makes it more not kosher than something else.
The same with a Muslim, by the way.
Yeah.
If you want to mess up with them, just send them.
I mean, there's a Rashi and Chumash. Rashi talks about how the pig does have some of the simanim. It has the hooves. Right. It doesn't chew its cud. Okay.
They stick their hooves up.
Right. But from a clinical perspective, it's a lav. They're both lav. Okay. But there's something more to being right. Something more to being a chazir. So the helolam chazir came and shegiel a chazichama nazi parna b'choma. So the chazir, meaning the imagery is powerful, being sensitive enough to realize that this is just ridiculous, that it's being offered up on the mizbeach. So as it's being pulled up the wall, sticks its hooves into the wall itself. V'nizdaza aretz arba meos parsal arba meos parsal. You will see this imagery a lot in Shas. The earth shook. The 400 by 400 parsa, the square area of all of Eretz Yisrael, shook at the notion that a pig was considered to be offered on the mizbech. Va'osa shah amru arushi gadol chazir va'arushi lamed beno chachmas yavanis. Two curses were proclaimed at that point in time. Number one, a curse for anyone who raises pigs in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, nobody here, please report to me that there actually are raising pigs in Eretz Yisrael. Although, yeah, exactly. So chachmas yavanis and chachmas yavanis is and anyone who engages in this type of communication also is going to be cursed as well. You understand both of these are relevant or germane to the story. Mm-hmm. And at that time we learned also that that is a story in which the armor was brought, the barley for the armor was brought from Gagot Srifim. It sounds like that these two events happened the same year from the Bryce, it sounds that way. And the Gemara further explains what happened, meaning what was the story that The Omer had to come from Galgut Srifim. So that year they went to look out for barley. Achrazu, and they made a proclamation, meaning they couldn't find any barley, and so they made a hachraza, they made a proclamation, please somebody help us. Also, charasha osiv chadiyada a igra v'chadiyada a tzrifa. So a cheresh comes. Somebody who is unable to communicate, he's a mute. Right? In this case, it's hard to say that he's a deaf mute. Normally we say that a deaf mute doesn't have das. So let's just say that he's a mute, that he's unable to speak. And so what he has to do is a charade, game of charades, in which he's going to have to try to explain. He knows where to get barley from. Wow. And he's going to do this in a way of sign language. Right? Old-fashioned sign language. So what he does is Osif Chadiyada Igra. So he takes one hand and he puts it on the roof of something, right? Could be the roof of a house. And Vechadiyada, and he takes his other hand and he puts it on a tzrif, on a hut. Okay.
So he has both.
So now, if you're good at the game, right? So you know, Amr Lehu, Mordechai. So along comes Mordechai. Now, is this the same Mordechai as we have in Megillas Esther? Right. So that was my initial reaction, Rabbi Goldstein, when I read the Gemara, is that it's not. But Rashi says, right? Let's right for full purposes of disclosure, Rashi says it is. It's the same Mordechai. Come back to that Rashi in just a moment.
A couple hundred years after.
That's correct. That's correct. You're not the first person to make that observation, but that's correct. I'll come back to that in a moment. Amalu Mordechai miika duchta deshama galgot three from galgos and Mordechai. I realized right away he's trying to communicate to us and tell us where to get the Omer from. And so all he did is he took the two hands, looked at where the two hands were placed upon, and he says, got it. So is there a place called either Gagot Srifim or Srifim Gagos? He didn't know which word came first, but he knew what the two words were. Bajkabashkachu, and good. And they did a little bit of a search, they found it. Good. And Mordechai was the interpreter. Mordechai was the one who was able to interpret.
Presumably put his hands repeatedly on them because it's plural.
And I also was thinking that if we're going to be smart about this, the right hand should go on the first word, and the left hand should go on the second word. But that's me saying that after the fact. I mean, I don't know if I would have said that before. Okay, 50 days later, you bring the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos, and same problem occurred. They needed new wheat, and they didn't know where to go. Achrazu, and they made a proclamation. They said, does anyone know where we can get freshly ripened wheat? Asahu gavracha charsha, and along comes the deaf, along comes the mute. Osev yadai a'ena, so he takes one hand and he puts it on the eye.
Now they knew he's got something.
Vechad yada asichra, and he takes his other hand and he puts it on the bolt of a door. Amlu Mordechai, umi'ika duchta deshema ein socher socher ayin. So again, Mordechai comes along. Presumably, somebody else should have figured it out also. But Mordechai comes along and he says, "Maybe is there a place called Ein Socher Socher Ein Bakuvashkechu?" Okay, and so they found that place as well. Okay, and the whole purpose of the Braisa coming in here is to give further explanation about what the Mishnah taught us. The Mishnah taught us that one year they had to go all the way out to Gagot Srifim, and Ein Socher, and the Gemara gives us a little more historical perspective of when this occurred and under what circumstances it occurred, and it also gives a big yeshar koach to a person by the name of Mordechai. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Mordechai, according to Rashi, is the same Mordechai as the story of Esther. That's difficult. It's a difficult Rashi.
There were no Yevanim in that story.
Right.
This was complex.
Yeah. So it's difficult because, think about it, we are now at the story of Hanukkah. We're past the story of Hanukkah. Right? Because we are now at a couple generations after the original Chashmonaim. Mm-hmm. So now we are Hanukkah plus two generations. Now, for those of you who, even if you don't know a lot of history, so all you need to know is that Hanukkah takes place in the middle of Bayit Sheni. Bayit Sheni lasted for 420 years. Hanukkah takes place in the middle of Bayit Sheni. So you're talking basically about 200 years after the Second Temple was built. Right. Mordechai lived even before the second temple was built. Mordechai was during the story of Purim. Purim takes place before Bayis Sheni. That's the whole point, is that the story of Purim leads to the building of Bayis Sheni. So you're 200 plus, without being too detailed, you are 200 plus years after when we see Mordechai living. So even though we totally believe in longevity, and we, you know, and there was a time when people lived for very long years, hard, difficult Rashi to understand. Tosfos right away says, look at the bottom Tosfos on the page, second to last Tosfos on the page, Am lo Mordechai perish b'kunshus du Mordechai shayi b'me'achashash v'teima who lomar sheherich yamim kol kach. So Tosfos asks this question pretty much straight out. Hard to understand how we could have someone living that long. Tosfos does give a wonderful pshat. V'nira al shem Mordechai harishon hayu hanukrim hamamunim al shmo. Anyone appointed to that position was called Mordechai. Mordechai becomes a title, right? Lahavdil, like Paro, right? Give a better example. I don't have to. But I'm saying, but right? He's just it's cruel, but yes, he's cruel. But anyway, so it's a title that's given, meaning someone in that position who is an interpreter, who understands, who is able to figure things out, who is able to decode. He's given the title Mordechai, so we will say, says Tosfos, it's not the same Mordechai, but he's Mordechai-like. He's typified as a Mordechai personality. Yes. Somebody says Tosfos, somebody who's really smart is going to get appointed to that position.
Is he explaining Rashi, or is he...
No, he's not explaining Rashi. He disagrees with Rashi. Right, and I'm apt to defend Rashi, but it's difficult. Meaning, Tosfos points out, it's just historically difficult to defend Rashi. Okay, we're going to go on because there's more to the story. Meaning, we've hit the part of the story that's relevant to us. Our Mishnah talks about the searching and the finding of the barley by Shavuos and the wheat by second day of Pesach and the wheat by Shavuos. But the story goes on because more Mordechai talk. Hanushals Nashim, we're still on Samach Talmud Beis, four lines from the bottom of the Amud, five lines. Hanushals Nashim, Naisu Shalosh Kinim. So three women brought three kinim. A ken is a nest, it means a pair of birds. Okay? Typically, when you brought birds, you brought a pair. Now, birds, remember, birds are much more fungible than an animal. An animal is... You describe what the carbon's going to be by birds, not necessarily. You bring a pair of birds. It could be both of them are Ola. It could be one's an Ola, one's a Chatas. The Kohen himself could be the one that's going to make that determination after you give it to the Kohen. Okay, so they gave a pair of birds. Chad Amr, now one of the women said, Laziva, see, I'm bringing this because I'm a Zava. Period. Chad Amr li Yamasi. And the other one says, Yamasi. Literally translates as ocean. The Chadar Omer La'onasi, and the third one says, it's my ona, it's my time. Okay. And that's all the information each one of these women produced. Right? Contrary to the behavior of women in general, they were very terse in their language. So all one word description of what the carbon actually was. Now, Savamina, so they thought, meaning now the Kohanim who received the birds from the women, Zivasi Zava Mamish. Well, the one who says Zava meant that she Mamish was a Zava, which is what I would have gone, meaning that's what the word usually means. And if that's true, and if Zava means Zava Mamish, so that means that one bird's an Ol and one bird's a Chatas, as per the conclusion of a Zava, meaning she finished counting her Shivanakim, her seven clean days, and now she is bringing her Karbanos at the end. One bird's a Chatas, the other one's an Ola. Liyamasi, and the one that says that to my ocean, Liyamasi Mamish, she was flowing like an ocean, meaning she was a Zava. Same story. And one bird's an Ola, and one bird's a Chatas. Leonasi, Leonasa de Kulu. And the one who says Onasa, right, Rashi's gear says Onasa Mamish, right, meaning it's my time to bring the carbon because I was a Zava. Meaning, to put it simply, all three of them were a Zava, concluding their Yemei Ziva, meaning they had they were bleeding not during the Yemei Nida, but rather during Yemei Ziva. 7 days of Yemei Nida, 11 days of Yemei Ziva. They bled 3 consecutive days during Yemei Ziva. As a result of that, there was Zava Gedola. As a result of that, they have to count Shiva Nikim, 7 clean days. At the 8th day, they're going to bring a carbon. The carbon is going to be made up of an Ola and a Chatas. Okay, and that's what the Kohanim thought, even though they only gave one word to describe it. But look, the first woman certainly sounds like that's what she is. She says the word Zava. And that's what we thought. That's what the Kohanim thought. One bird should be an Ola and one bird should be a Chatas. So Mordechai says, I don't think so. I don't think that's what they meant. So this is Mordechai the interpreter. This is Mordechai the decoder. Mordechai understands better than they do what they meant.
Is it Mordechai reporting also?
Huh?
Is it Mordechai? Is it the original Mordechai?
Yeah, in the Braisa, I assume it's the same Mordechai as what was being described earlier.
Whoever that Mordechai is.
Whoever he may be.
Is saying this, it's the original Mordechai, even according to the Tosfos.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
how did he know that?
This is like just going back to document how the title Mordechai started.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'm I'll accept it, but what... All right, we'll discuss after. Okay, so Shema Bezov Sikana, Shema Biyam Sikana, and Shema Be'ena Sikana. So Mordechai says, no, they're bringing the karbanos not because they're Zava, but they're bringing the karbanos because they may have actually undergone an illness. One of them was illness was due to a Zov, due to... She was just bleeding too much, and she thought that something was wrong, and she thought that she was critically ill, and critically, her life was in jeopardy. Maybe one who said Yamasi actually was drowning in the ocean, and she was miraculously saved. And the third one, maybe she had some sort of eye ailment, and she miraculously recovered from their eye ailment. And maybe all these are just thanking Hashem for saving them. Meaning, they're all Olas. All the bird are Olas. Now, I was thinking at this point in time, yeah, good, I was thinking just like you. Why didn't they bring a carbon totem? Right, carbon totem would be more appropriate to be brought at that point in time. Huh? Maybe, and maybe it was just a function of them not being able to afford it. I also thought of that as being the possible answer. Okay, very good. The kula olas nenu. Anyway, but they're all carbon olas. Baduk, now, remember, Mordechai didn't know. He was speculating. So, now the Kohanim hearing Mordechai and his theory in terms of why they brought it, so they ran back. They ran back and the baduk and they did an examination by Ashkach. And they found that he was absolutely right. The Hainu did not, we're on the top of Samachay. The Hainu did not, and that's the Mishnah. Psachya ala kin. Mishnah Shkalim. Mishnah Shkalim tells us who is appointed over which positions in the Beis HaMikdash. And we have in the Mishnah Shkalim a person by the name of Psachya, and he's appointed over the birds. And Zem Mordechai. And this is Mordechai. Oh, by the way, that's maybe what he means. Oh, all right. Now, very good. That's excellent. Meaning the Mishnah Shkalim is actually describing Mordechai himself. Okay, now I'm with you. Zeh Mordechai, lamani krashmo psachya sheposech dvarim v'dorsham v'yodeh v'shivan lashan. So the Gemara says, the reason what makes him stand out is that psach dvarim v'dorsham, he opens things up, he unlocks doors, and he's able to open and unlock and decode, and he knows 70 languages. The Gemara says, wait a second, he knows 70 languages? Everyone in Sanhedrin knows 70 languages. That's a prerequisite. Kulo Sanhedrin nami ad shivan lashon damar Rabbi Yochanan emo shivan Sanhedrin ela bale chachma bale mara bale koma bale zikna balek shafim. Right, the balek koma is the one that gets me. Right, you got to be tall in order to be a member of Sanhedrin. It kills me. Don't think for a moment that I fit into any of the other requirements. But they say about Rav Moshe, by the way, that he was unbelievably short. They say he was a. You saw him, right? He was about 5 feet tall. Right, very short. Anyway, right.
He looks tall.
understood. So the Bale Mar, Bale Kama, Bale Zikna, Bale Kshafim. So I'll go back, I'll spend all these in just a moment. But Yodim Shivan Lasham, and they need to know 70 languages. So what is the Mishnah Shkalim saying? Oh, this Psachya / Mordechai, he's so unbelievable, he knows 70 languages. They all do. So what's the Mishnah making such a big deal about? So shalot etzan sham. I'm sorry. The other shem aloshon shalot etzan hedrin shamas mi pia torgamon. Because we don't want someone to walk into Sanhedrin and need an interpreter. We don't want that. We want the members of Sanhedrin to be able to hear and understand directly. You know, things get lost in interpretation. Things get lost in translation. So you want when anyone has to come in front of Beis Din Sanhedrin, so they want to be able to hear directly from the source itself. LSO. Also, that's another issue as well, but not always. But yes, Rashi says like me, meaning Rashi says that things get lost in translation. So anyway, so Ella to have a bio lishne vidarish. It's more than just in the ability to understand languages. What makes Psachia / Mordechai so unbelievably special is his ability to mix things up. The word bile belula, right? Rashi says, bolel uma'arve v'lashonos. What he's able to do is cross-reference, interpret, decode, right? It was just more than an ability to understand the language. It was insight into the languages.
Kind of like but, if you were there with this horse, you know, like Tatafot, he was able to get two languages.
Right. Very good. Behind the Dichsib, Mordechai Bilshan. Right, Mordechai, he was called, not in the Megillah, but in Sefer Nehemiah, he's called Mordechai Bilshan, from the word Lashon. He's able to actually go in and really dig into the root of the word, not just simply speak different languages.
I think in modern Hebrew, Bilshan is a detective.
It's right.
King Solomon had the same ability?
I don't know. So, could be. I don't know. As for just general criteria, just one interesting point, and then we're going to move on. Just in terms of criteria in order to make it to Sanhedrin, right. So we had a lot of things that the Gemara described in the name of Rav Yochanan. Balei Chachma, you have to be smart, that I think we all understand. Balei Mara, you have to be of good appearance. Right? You have to be pleasant to look at. Okay? Balei Koma, you have to be tall.
Rashi seems to not necessarily say that.
Which one? Balei Koma. Right, stature. Right. Bali Zikna, you got to be older. Bali Shuffin, this is an interesting one. You have to be someone who's well versed in sorcery. The Yodim Shivanoshin, you got to know 7 languages. For a moment, let's just talk about this. You have to be well versed in sorcery, says Rav Yochanan, in order to be part of the Sanhedrin. Why do you need to be well versed in sorcery? Remember, practicing sorcery is a capital offense. Capital offense. Look at Rashi. Listen to Rashi. Rashi here is amazing. Rashi says, "Shim yehi anadon mechashef." Let's say someone was guilty of a capital offense, and so you tried him, and he was actually convicted of a capital offense. So now we're going to put him to death. And let's say he's a mechashef. Let's say he's a magician. He's a sorcerer. Now, of the real type, right? Which, if the Rambam heard me say that right now, he would laugh at me. But of the real type. V'ha'or lo yishlo bo. And we're trying to kill him, but through his magic, he basically is able to withstand our burning of him, the fires. Yasu hein michshafos v'imsuhu. I know it sounds like I'm reading straight out of Harry Potter right now. But basically what Sanhedrin's going to do is that they're going to be able to counteract his witchcraft with their witchcraft so that the fires will in fact consume him, b'chol misa sheyuchlu, or whichever which way they can actually put him to death.
It's supposed to be skila. The bishop is a skila, so...
Well,
maybe it's something else that he gets burned.
Well, you don't know, meaning, I did spend a lot of time thinking about this Rashi, maybe a little too much.
But the strafe is...
You don't...
Hamda says, he should have been the skila. What's the choice?
No, because I didn't see the note, but you don't know what he was guilty of. Yeah. It could be that he did another offense, and on top of that, he just happens to be a mechashef. Right? That could be. Anyway, but... Okay, that Rashi is interesting for so many reasons. Let me just quickly string together 2 Rashis.
This actually happened with JC.
Well, I'll string together 2 Rashis. There is a Rashi in Sanhedrin, right, in the 6th Perek of Sanhedrin, which describes Shimon ben Shetach, right? Do you remember the story? Right? And over there, it's a long Rashi. Rashi covers two columns of Gemara. But Rashi over there, what is it? Mem something. Mem Gimel, Mem Dalet. I didn't look it up. But if you look at Rashi over there, Rashi says that Shimon ben Shetach had a whole bunch of witches that he needed to put to death. And he basically... It's funny, he didn't use sorcery. To be totally fair and honest. But he did counteract their sorcery. Right? It's a famous story where he brought in a whole bunch of yeshiva students and read the Bachrim, and he had them go into the witch's cave, and he had them dance with the witches and lift them off the ground. And once they were lifted off the ground, they no longer had any powers. And then he was able to take them all and kill them. And the Gemara basically says over there, Rashi brings it down. I think Rashi is based on a Yerushalmi. Rashi is quoting a source for the story. It's not from the Bavli. But anyway, point being is that at least you see from Rashi over there, as Rashi over here is saying, is that if you need to counteract the witchcraft in order to kill somebody, so you do that. Anyway, that is...
They took them off the ground, and then when their feet weren't connected to the ground, then they didn't
right,
have the power.
Right, correct. Now, that is Rashi over here. Now, I have to tell you, in other words, just... So it's a fascinating Rashi. It basically gives license to the Sanhedrin to use sorcery if necessary. Okay. There's a basic machlokas everyone knows between the Rambam and the Ramban. Rambam basically and everybody as to whether or not there actually is sorcery out there. You know, the Rambam does not believe in any of this. Any of this. Does not believe in witchcraft and does not believe in sorcery, does not believe in anything beyond the rationale.
He was a doctor.
He was a physician, but that doesn't mean anything. I know plenty of physicians who are believers in witchcraft and sorcery, but he was a And then, Danny, you have to deal with some of the more basic issues. This is a topic in of itself. I'm gonna just touch it and move away from the topic. But then you're gonna have to deal with basic questions like what Danny asked, meaning, according to the Rambam, what's the Torah prohibiting? If there's no such thing as witchcraft, if there's no such thing as sorcery, so what's the Torah saying? Don't do it. So, according to the Rambam, you know what he says? Don't be a charlatan. Meaning, don't pretend like you're doing magic. That's the Rambam says. That's what the Torah means. It's all, the Lashon of the Rambam is achiza seinayim. You're tricking people. It's, you know, the magicians of nowadays, right? It's illusion. It's not, none of it's real. It's not real sorcery. But according to the Rambam, that's what the Torah is prohibiting. Don't do that. Right. And so, how the Rambam, obviously, all this discussion that we had within Rashi about them practicing magic and you counteracting with your magic, and Rambam says that Rambam wouldn't agree to any of this. And Tosfos on the top of the page, right, to look at the top Tosfos. Balik Shaf from Tosfos writes, Perish of Haigon, Kide Leidas Adin, Kidamin and Hosa Masa Chayav Haokhez Anaim Potter Vahindu Tikama Rebbe Lazar, but so far, but Misos, Shani Shona Shalosh Meos Halachos, Benetias Kishuin, Ukidamin and Ami of Atalim and Lahavan Olaharos. Right, Tosfos over here quotes the name of Haigon, Tosfos Sanhedrin, same thing, says the same thing as well. And it's a simpler pshat, really, in the Gemara. They have to be Balik Shafim, because they got to know. Meaning that somebody's going to go on trial for practicing magic.
Right.
And the Bali and the Sanhedrin need to know, what's magic and what isn't magic? Is it real or is it not real? So they need to know magic, not because they're going to practice the magic, but they're going to need to know magic because they have to understand, you're going to put somebody to death for practicing, you got to know... Were they practicing magic, or were they just some sort of charlatan, some sort of just, you know, was it, you know, just an illusion? Start the next Mishnah. The Mishnah begins. Ketzad hein osin. How did they do it? Meaning, we're back to the Omer.
How they get?
How do they actually go down, and how do they actually harvest the Omer? So the Mishnah starts. Good. So ketzad hein osin shulchei beis niyotzim erev yomtov. So they will go out now on the eve of yomtov. So and what they would do is they would find the barley and earmark the ears of barley that they're going to harvest. The barley is still connected to the ground. Find a nice couple of plump ears of barley and harvest. How much? So we know the answer to that. Enough to create three or five sa'in of sorry, a barley grain. So wait just a second. Kadesh Enoch lips are called Ayara Sasmucha Sasham is Kamsa Sasham. Kadesh Nixar Be'isagado. When it came time for the Katira, it was a big to do. All the members of the city would gather around and look around as they would gather. And by purpose and by design, it was done in a big fashion. Kevan Shehichshicha. So now it's getting dark. Meaning, remember, now it's Motzei Yontif. It's the first day of Pesach. And right last night we had a wonderful Seder. And now the next day, I guess took a little nap in the middle of the day. But now it's the next night. And the action still continues. So the next night it's Motzei Yontif. So we're out there right by Yerushalayim. And we're out in the field. And we go through a process. It was a ceremony. So, did the sun set? And the answer was yes. And the question goes again, Baha Shemesh, did the sun set? Now, it's a ceremony, right? Because if the question was repeated for purposes of information, you don't have to repeat the question. The answer was yes. It was part of the ceremony. It was part of the Esek Gadol. It was part of the big production that was done. All this was done. And even though the Mishnah says it only twice, as we're going to learn later on, all these questions were repeated three times. Three is a crowd. Remember, we talked about that idea. Abba Hashem Hashemah Hin. Magal Zu. Should I use this sickle? Hin. Yeah. Magal Zu Amar Hin. Yeah, that sickle. So kupazu, this basket in order to collect, Amrahin, yeah, that basket. Kupazu, how about this basket? Meaning pointing to the same basket. Amrahin, he said, yeah. Bishabis, Omer Lahem, Shabazu. Now, what if it takes place on Shabbos? We're gonna do this on Shabbos, Amrahin, yeah, we're gonna do it on Shabbos. Shabazu, this Shabbos, Amrahin. Ektsor, should I harvest? Amrim lo, Kitsor. Yeah, harvest. Ektsor, should I cut? Behem or Mimlo, Ketsor, and they said, yeah, cut. Shalosh Pamim Akol Davar Vidavar Vehem or Mimlo Hin Hin Hin. And all these questions were repeated three times. Right? I don't know why the Mishnah just doesn't repeat it three times, says it twice, and then afterwards punctuates by saying, and all these have to be done three times. Anyway, Kolkach Lama. Now, why the production? We all know the answer, but here's where the Mishnah tells us this for the first time. They firmly believe that the Ksira does not take place on a Motzei Yomtov, the night after the first day of Yomtov, but rather they feel that it takes place on a Motzei Shabbos, the first Saturday night after the first day of Pesach. We'll come back, we'll discuss more of that as we go through the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, we start with the Braisa. Now this is a Braisa, this is Megillas Tanis, right? Mm-hmm. Megillas Tanis, we have it, we have Megillas Tanis. It is a very old record of days which were quasi-Yontif, right? Now, here are things that you know, Yontifs that you know about that are found in Megillas Tanis. Chanukah is a Megillas Tanis. Right, a yontif that is not one of the yamim tovim. It's not a real moed. It's not in Parshas Amor. Takes place afterwards, but the chachamim added it as a yontif during the year. It's a quasi yontif during the year. That's the Megillas Tanis. That one you knew. Here's another one you all know. Purim. Purim's the Megillas Tanis. Okay. There's a whole list of these quasi yontifs that are in Megillas Tanis that you and I don't know about unless you are well-versed in Megillas Tanis. Now, on these quasi-yontifs, there's no Isra Malacha. It's not that you can't do Malacha. You're allowed to do Malacha. Much like Chanukah and Purim, you're allowed to do Malacha. These quasi-yontifs, you're allowed to do Malacha as well. It's that, right, it's the no Tachanun, right? It's the Lag Ba'Omer of days. It's no Tachanun. No Tachanun, no fasting is allowed to be organized on these days. And some of them are so special that you can't even say hesped. You can't eulogize. So if someone dies on one of these days, and you're going to bury him because of the quasi-yontif nature of these days, so you're not allowed to give a hesped. Right. So Eilin Yomin, the lowly son of Behon, these are the days that you're not allowed to fast on these days. Umitzason, by the way, Megillas Tanis is totally in Aramaic, so makes it easy to read. So No. So umnix hason, and some of them the lola mispad bahon, that you're not allowed to eulogize on these days. May reish yachad de Nisan atamya bay, from the first day of Nisan until the eighth day of Nisan. That's an 8-day yontif, right? But not, this is not Hanukkah. This is Rosh Chodesh Nisan until the 8th day of Nisan. Itakum Tmida, the Tamid was established. What does that mean? Stay tuned. We're going to explain. Dolo lemispad, and no hesped was allowed. Umitamnaya bay the atsof moada. Now from the 8th day of Nisan until the end of Yontif, meaning Yontif here meaning Pesach, isosav chaga de shvuaya dolo lemispad. The holiday of Shavuos was established. Again, I'm going to explain what that means better in just a moment. And so therefore, no mitzvah, no eulogy. According to Rashi, the correct year over here is the lowly hita'ana, no fasting.
That's like a 50-day period, basically.
No, it's...
You already have from beginning of, actually, more than that.
No, but when he says, when the Brisa says moed, it means moed of Pesach. Not Moed of Shavuos, at least according to Rashi.
Uh-huh.
So that means from the 8th day of Nisan until the 22nd day of Nisan. Now it's a fair question to ask me, meaning what are we doing establishing a Yontif on Yontif itself? Meaning from day 1 till day 8, right? Those are days that are not Yontif, so that I understand. But from day 8 till the last day of Yontif, which is the last day of Pesach, so basically you're establishing a quasi-Yontif on a real Yontif. Okay, that's a fair question. You can ask me that question. I'm not going to give you an answer now for that, but that is a legitimate question. Now, the Gemara goes on to explain. Look, the Tzedukim said the following. Now, this is during Bayit Sheni, this is during the Second Temple. They said, you know who could bring a carbon tamid? An individual. A private donation could be brought as a carbon tamid. Now, we all know... No, it can't. Meaning, we all know that the Talmud is a communal offering, and it has to be used with community money. It cannot be privately donated. No individual can come and bring the Karban Talmud with his money. Tzedukim thought that you could do. Now, my Darish, remember, Tzedukim don't just simply just float svaras out in the air. Everything for them is based on Pesukim. They are believers in Torah Shebichtav. They just don't buy into the Torah Shebaal Peh. So what do they say? My darish has a kevesecha taseba bokevesa kevesa sheni tasebein harabayim. Now the key word over here is taase. Taase is lashon yachid. Right. So they think that's not just talking about the one kohen who's bringing the karban, that's talking about the funding of the karban. That's taase. So my ahadra, now our response to them is, as karbani lachmi leishai, Tishmeru.
That's plural.
Sheyukulam by Mitchumas Alishka. Okay. So that was the give and take. And during these first 8 days of Nisan, now by the way, it makes perfect sense why this debate takes place the first 8 days of Nisan. At least my guess is. This is my guess. Right? Because that's when you start bringing from new monies. The new monies that are used in order to buy the carbon tamid starts on day one of Nisan. That is day one of the fiscal year. So now, of that day, so they were arguing, the Tzedukim were saying, oh, you don't need communal money. Right? You can go and buy it, for you can go and fund it with individual money. Maybe, perhaps, this is such speculation on my part, maybe they didn't have enough funds from the communal money. I don't know if that's true. But certainly the point is that's when, you know, that's the new fiscal year, and that's when they're going to start having the debate. Good. And so for those 8 days, right, vikuchim, right, arguments between the Purushim and the Tzedukim, and the Purushim, right? Got to know who to root for. And the Purushim won the debate. So for those 8 days, they were given quasi-yantif status. Next, the adsof mitamnaya, the adsof moada.
Now, from probably before the Tzedukim got really carried away when they were just breaking away.
Could be speculation. I don't know. Okay, mitamnaya v'atzof moada. Now, from day 8 until the last day of Pesach, again, those days were categorized as quasi-yantiv. Megillas Tanis days. Isus of Chaga de Shvuasa de Lo Lemispech. You Baitusim Omrim. So here we're going to have the Baitusim. Baitusim are Tzedukim like. Different group, but same basic storyline. Believers in Torah Shebichtav, not believers in Torah Shebapeh. They would say Omrim Atzeres Achar Shabbos. That the first day of the Atzeres would always come out on Sunday. Shavuos would always be on Sunday. Why? You ask? Because we start counting always on a Sunday. The Karban Omer was brought on a Sunday. Now, you don't have to know calendar that well to know that the day that you start counting the Omer is the day that Shavuos is going to fall out on. Right? It's 50 days later. So that's 7 weeks, and then the next day after that. So, right? It's pretty easy to figure out. So for them, the Omer is always brought on a Sunday. Shavuos is always going to be brought on a Sunday. Now, this is great. Now, we only have a couple minutes left this morning, but this is great now because we are going to be given insight into the machlokus between the Tzedukim and the Purushim, in this case the Baitusim, in terms of what was at the issue over here in terms of the machlokus. Now look, when all said and done and when the day's over, it all really, chalk it up to Torah Shabbat Peh. Meaning we have the oral tradition. And our oral tradition says that even though the Torah describing the Karban Omer being brought on Macharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos, we know, we have not just the written word, but we have the oral tradition that that means Shabbos there means Pesach. So when the day's over, and when all said and done, without going through any Gemara whatsoever, we know that it's Torah, that through Torah Shabbat Peh, that Shabbos means Pesach. Good. However, what the Gemara will now do for a Amud of Gemara, and we're only going to just be able to do a little bit this morning, is basically we're going to go over some arguments back and forth between Baitusim and Purushim, and even through deductive logic, we can arrive at the conclusion that Shabbos here does not mean Shabbos, but Shabbos here means Pesach. Even if you don't accept the Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral tradition. But again, though, it's, you know, we have the oral tradition, so, you know, we don't need all the arguments, but still, they exist. So, who argues with him? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. By the way, this puts us at the end of Bais Sheni. Right? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one who saw the destruction of the Second Temple. So we are at the tail end of the Second Temple. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai looks at the Baitusim and just dismisses them, calls them shotim, and nobody's gonna start up with Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. He is great. Chutz mizaken echad, but you know, listen, Baitusim are Jews. You know what I mean? And Jews tend to have a little bit of chutzpah, and some Jews have even a little bit more. So there was one who was ready to argue with him. Shayem efatfek kenegdo. He was ready to start up with Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. V'amar Moshe Rabbeinu all of Yisrael haya v'yodeh she'aretz Eretz Yom Echad. Look, Moshe Rabbeinu loved the Jews. This is going to be, right? And it's not funny when you say it's going to be funny, but it's going to be funny. And I'm telling you. And the Baitus, the old Baitus says to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Moshe loved the Jewish people. And he knew that Shavuos was only one day. So, you have a one-day Yontif. One day Yantif standing by itself, that's not a vacation. That's not a vacation. So you know when it's going to be a vacation? Put it on a Sunday. Moshe put it on a Sunday, so you have a two-day weekend. We in America understand that. Meaning whenever 4th of July comes out, so they take they're somehow able to move the make it a 3-day weekend. We have Labor Day, we have Memorial Day. We understand the concept, Lahavdil. We understand the concept of making a 3-day weekend. And the Baitus says, that's Moshe. Moshe was there establishing the first. Now, remember, Shabbos is only, they didn't have this weekend like we have. Right? They only had Shabbos. Shabbos was their day off. So Moshe was going to put Shavuos the day after Shabbos, 2-day weekend. So now, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says back to the Baitos, that it took 11 days to go from Choriv to Har Seir. Har Seir is adjacent to Eretz Yisrael. So, from Har Sinai to get to Eretz Yisrael, 11 days. That's all you needed in order to go from point A to point B. How long did it take to get from Har Sinai to Eretz Yisrael? Took them 40 years. Right? So the Moshe Rabbeinu, oh, if you saw Hayalama Ichran Bemidbar Arbaim Shana. You think Moshe really liked us that much? I mean, come on, 40 years for an 11-day journey. Don't get so excited about how much Moshe loved us. Now, you and I know, right? Because we don't read the Gemara that literally. Right, you and I know that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai wasn't giving a real answer to the Baitis. The Baitis was giving somewhat of a silly argument to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Someone gives you silliness, so sometimes the best way to respond is with just more silliness. So, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai literally was playing with the man. Was playing with him. Okay, we can resume tomorrow on Shabbos. We're going to go through the arguments. How we can see, without having the Torah Shabbat Peh, and we have it. So, right? But how we can see, even just using deduction and logic and reason, how we can see that Machros HaShabbos actually is a reference to Pesach. Press the wrong button.